Sure. I can do that.
Okay. So just mention that, or, that's fine. You do that, and then I'll when I introduce myself, I'll just mention that Rob's out of town, and that we'll talk about PAX when he gets back, and
Okay.
then we can dive into the Apple event.
Okay,
Sound good?
yeah. Just start whenever.
Yeah, I think we're ready. Unless you want to make weird noises that I can capture and put in the post-production.
Honk,
The intro.
honk. Skeeter. You know, you gotta throw it back. I got pork chop last time, so now I got
Yeah,
skeeter.
it's good.
Welcome to episode 28 of The Unwind, where we talk about tech, games, gadgets, and just geek culture in general. I'm Sean Thomas.
And I'm Josiah Hills, and normally we have Rob Steller lead off the podcast, but he's out of town. He's actually at South by Southwest right now for his work. So last episode we did mention that we were all going to PAX, and
Yep.
So we did that last weekend. It was a lot of fun, but we're going to wait to talk about that until when Rob gets back. So, but if you're interested, we did post some pictures on the website. So that's if you go to unwind.audio, or sorry, theunwind.audio, you can go see the latest pictures that we took from PAX. So let's get started with the show, Sean. We're gonna have
Sounds
kind of
good.
a shorter show, so we're gonna not we're gonna skip over the super fight that we've been doing the last couple weeks, and we'll obviously only have two topics instead of three. But my topic is kind of the 800-pound gorilla in the room. The obvious one. We had the Apple Spring Forward event this past Monday.
Oh, did
So,
something happen? Apple did something happen?
yeah, exactly. So they did mention, they talked about the Apple Watch as everybody expected, but they had a couple other things too. So let's talk about the research kit. What do you think? Do you want to describe that for the audience, and then tell us your thoughts?
Sure, I'll try to, but this is a big thing that I'm concerned about. Is I think it's one of those things that there's a lot that has to be figured out going forward. But basically, what Research Kit is, it's not an API, but almost a framework where researchers can actually make apps that can be used to actually get data in terms of research data. So, for example, they showed off an app. I forgot what it was working with, but basically, you can talk into your phone, and that
I think it was
actually,
Parkinson's.
Yeah, I think you were. You're right. It's about Parkinson's. And basically, the mic picks up what you're saying. You say specifically what the app tells you, and that in turn becomes data for researchers to study Parkinson's or whatever disease. The
Yeah.
big advantage of this is, millions of people have iPhones. It's very easy to actually use an app, and one of the biggest obstacles in research is finding patients, finding people
Right.
who are actually going to be involved in this study. And this is really just taking away that roadblock and making it super easy to access people. And they're not just throwing this out there. They've partnered with a lot of really big research organizations, different universities and things like that. And they've already set up, I don't have an iPhone, so I haven't tried this, but they've already set up, I think, five apps that they showed off that you can do right now and kind of contribute your data to.
Yeah, they've got Mount Sinai. They're working with Stanford University, Meloria University, a couple others, and so the five apps are: one is about your heart, some kind of heart health. So they're using the heart measuring capacities of smartphones and the Apple Watch, soon to be released Apple Watch. One's the Parkinson's one that you mentioned. So, like you said, they could measure your voice and how steady or shaky it is to ID, to get a feel for how your symptoms are either getting better or worse. And then also, I think they had something with the gyroscope to kind of like hold the phone while you walk,
Sure.
and it'll measure
Super
how
shaky.
steady your steps are, that sort of thing. And so one with glucose, so obviously you're going to have a glucose reader meter that would plug into the phone, and then a couple others. But I think it's really neat. I have a lot of hope for it because, like you said, one of the big things is getting people to participate in studies. But then another big thing is to get them to accurately record their data, and because you either have them come in to the hospital where you get very precise and accurate data, but you just get that one data point when they're in the hospital. And with certain things like blood pressure, et cetera, there's actually a negative impact of going into the hospital for some people. Like their blood pressure just goes up when they're being
Oh,
tested,
because
right?
sure.
And so they call it, hospital hypertension, kind of jokingly, right? So that type of thing can be potentially avoided. And then on the flip side, if you ask patients in or subjects participating in your test in the past, to record things, you don't know how reliable their recording of the data is, that sort of thing. And then you have kind of in between devices where, okay, for that example with blood pressure, you might have them buy or buy a portable blood pressure machine and use that in their house. But then the interface is
Or an apple.
proprietary. The interface is proprietary to that machine. And how do you get that data and send it off to your doctor? And supposedly this is all kind of inclusive, right? So you log into the app, you sign in, and you accept the terms of the study, and then boom, you're sending anonymous data into the databases of the researchers. So pretty powerful stuff, I think.
Apple's not stupid. They know there are a lot of steps that have to go in between because this is research. Like one thing you said that has to be anonymized because they don't want to have they need blind studies. First of all, you want
Right.
that, and also you don't want to have this kind of data stolen and things like that. But the
Right.
only thing, and I just don't know enough about research to really have a strong opinion on. But I wonder whether or not there will be issues in terms of actual data quality, in terms of what you're actually allowed to put out there. I don't know if there'll be any IRB protocols that they have to find ways around or things like that, because there are studies that require some kind of specific setting. I don't
Yeah.
know, or maybe they'll just tailor the type of studies to something that's more, that works better with something like the iPhone, which would make sense as well. But that's
Right.
the only the unknown that I want to see. But it definitely sounds really promising.
Yeah, of course they're going to have to limit their studies with the based on the limitations of their tools, right? So, if they're lacking a certain level of precision based on the iPhone or an Apple Watch or something like that, then yeah, they're going to have to limit what conclusions they can draw. And obviously IRB, I mean, that's going to be a part of the study before it ever gets becomes available to the general public. So IRB is Internal Review Board, which would you presumably these researching organizations are going to have an ethics committee look at the quality of their research study and procedures before it ever goes to the public. So that's definitely going to still be part of the game, I'm pretty sure. The encryption and the anonymization going to be very important. One really cool thing we have to wait and see about this is they said it's going to be open source. So it really seems like they're trying to do this from a very altruistic place, and at least obviously that's how they're marketing it. And so I have a lot of high hopes for it. The cynic in me, though, the cynic in me says, well, if my doctor tells me I need to check my blood pressure regularly, I can go get sometimes I can get my health insurance to pay for my blood pressure testing kit at home. So potentially, will they ever get insurance companies to cover the cost of an iPhone or an Apple Watch so that I can send these results to my doctor? That's the cynic in me, but either way, I think it's going to be potentially good for a lot of people's health. Even if you can't afford one of these smart devices, just the research that's collected, the data that's collected, through these studies, I think can be really powerful for people who aren't in the market for a smartphone or a smart watch or anything like that.
I can't wait for the argument in the future. Talking to the insurance company, you know, I'm allergic to aluminum and stainless steel, so I need the gold Apple Watch. It's just that's I can't do without it. That's
yeah.
no other option. So, well, yeah, definitely research kit is cool, but let's get on to the new market that Apple's entering, and that's smartwatches. They actually released or they showed off the Apple Watch. Now, we had seen it previously, but they priced it. They didn't exactly spec it, but they said more use cases for it, and they tried to explain what this thing is for and how it's going to work in your daily life. Seeing that, so what do you think about it? So, do you have a different feeling of the Apple Watch from before? And we'll get into pricing in a second, but in terms of its use cases, do you feel like you know more about what it's there for than you did 6 months ago?
Yeah, you know, we kind of talked about smart devices before a couple times and fitness trackers, that sort of thing. I'm actually sold on the concept. I do like the idea of wearing a watch again. You know, I had my Fitbit Force, and I like being able to look at my wrist to tell the time. Now, the quirky thing with the Fitbit Force is that I have to press a button to show me the time. Because, you know, so... they didn't really talk about it, but I know the Apple Watch is supposed to have a battery saving feature where the screen is off, but when you flip your wrist to look at the watch, it's supposed to turn on. So if as long as I can use it as a watch without having to press a button, that's ideal. I do like the idea of getting notifications to my wrist, not for everything, but you know, certain email notifications or certain messaging apps that I choose to turn on, or if I can choose VIPs to come to my wrist, that sort of thing, that'd be nice. I'm actually looking forward to that. Some of the apps and stuff like that, I think it just, you know, we have to wait and see. Beyond that, I feel like it's iPad all over again. And what I mean by that is you had some people really coming out and saying, it doesn't make any sense. It's just a bigger phone. What's the point? And then, you know, people got it in their hands and they were blown away by it. And that's not to say that the first iPad was perfect, right? Because a lot of people kind of forget that. Like,
yeah.
The first iPad was, you know, I don't see a lot of people still using the first iPad.
Don't even support it. It's funny because... it's amazing that Apple still supports old iPads, and they still support the Apple II, the iPad 2 and beyond.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. I still personally use an iPad 2. I would love to upgrade, but I just don't have the money right now, and I'm kind of waiting for an iPad Pro if that rumor turns out to be true. But my point is, you know, that first generation was innovative, but not without problems. I think a lot of people forget that because – in the years past, iPad became a resounding success. And so I guess that's the point I'm trying to make, is that I think Apple Watch still has a lot of potential to be something really special. And smartwatches in general, I think, will eventually stand the test of time. No pun intended. Well, maybe a little pun. But, but you know, this first generation is just going to be a little clunky, especially by the time you get to the third generation, you're going to look back and say, wow, really? You know, if you actually see an iPad 1 and hold it and then compare that to even just the iPad 2, it's a big, big difference in size and form factor, in design, and in speed, too. So it's just, you know, I think people like to get excited, and that's fine. Go ahead and get excited. But at the end of the day, I've said it before, I'll say it again, I don't buy first-gen stuff.
Yeah. Well, so a couple of things with that. You know, you made the point and that it's going to be like the iPad, in that so much of it is, well, I think part of the iPad's success is, A, you know, once people got it, they really liked it. But also app development just exploded and it really got popular. And I remember...
Yeah, not really, though. I mean, not that first year. It took a while. And it was the same thing with the iPhone, because iPhone didn't actually have local apps the first year it came out. The App Store didn't come out until a year later. And so iPad native apps, specifically apps designed for the iPad, were slow to roll out.
Because, I definitely get the iPhone because the whole idea of the App Store was brand new. I thought the iPad, at least, I know Apple had put out some really good products like GarageBand for the iPad, and people were using things
sure.
like that.
Sure.
And I remember, so Tim Cook specifically said during the keynote about the watch, he said, you know, I can't wait to see what you guys create when you get the, you know, development in your hands.
Right.
Which is totally true, but there's some part of me that... doesn't know if Apple 100% knows where it fits in completely. I feel like the examples they used on stage were kind of the examples that don't really make great use cases for the watch. Notifications is a great example. Then he showed one example of how he could remotely open his garage, which was very
right.
cool. So basically, he got a fake text from his daughter saying, oh, I'm at the house, but I forgot my keys or something like that. And so he is able to open his garage door on his Apple Watch. And you can see a live video feed of of his security camera and him opening the door. And this is a real app. So you know,
yeah,
there's already getting the app support, which is cool. But in my head, that's the kind of thing. So there's always this question, like you were saying before, you know, why can't I just do this on their phone? And there are some things that clearly, like notifications, it makes sense you don't want to pull out your phone. I also think actually maps while you're walking is another good example of when you don't want to pull out your phone, because you don't want to have to pull out your phone, as dumb as it sounds, risk dropping it. And then, you know, you put it back in your pocket every time you turn and stuff
right.
like that. I think that's a great example of uses. And so some of the examples they used just didn't feel as like...
I agree with what you're saying, and so, you know, our listeners might accuse me of being a fanboy at this point, but I'm going to defend this a little bit, and here's my thinking, here's my logic. So, I think Apple actually has a good idea of what it can be used for, but those apps don't exist, and they're not going to develop those apps yet, right? On top of that, to do some of these things, I'll give examples in a second, but to do some of these things... they know that this first generation device doesn't have the battery life and all the sensors that they want it to.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So the things that it really could do is take that example to the max that you talked about with the garage door. So this can really be, if not the hub, a primary, think of it as an arm or an extension of your Internet of Things network, right? So this idea of, because it has NFC, all right, so I'm getting close to home, it pings my watch, and my garage door opens up, right? So you don't have to,
sure.
not that it's a huge inconvenience to press the button, but it just knows that you're there, right? That sort
yeah.
of thing. And, okay, so you're walking by, you know, a combination of iBeacon and stuff like that, and using the Taptic engine on the watch and getting notifications, like you said, so you don't have to pull out your phone, that sort of thing. Being able to control... the lights, being able to control your thermometer, thermostat, that sort of thing from your watch, all of that is very likely going to come. But when you look at the battery life that they described, 18 hours, that was a 30-minute workout while streaming audio from the watch to your Bluetooth headsets, plus 45 minutes of using apps,
yeah,
and then
yeah.
And then checking it five times an hour, right? And that
yeah,
gets you
like
18 hours of battery life. Well, when the apps finally come on board, you're going to do a lot more than 45 minutes of checking apps, you know? And some of those apps are going to take a lot more energy because they're using all different antennas, et cetera. So I think they have an understanding of what it can be done, but marketing-wise, like I said, they can't promise it because they haven't built the apps and other people haven't built the apps yet, and they know that battery life is going to suffer as soon as they turn on all those functionalities. That's my suspicion. And so they're just trying to say, yep, this is a really nice watch, and it's so fancy, and I feel great having it. It's so personal, blah, blah, blah. They're really talking about how it feels rather than the functionality of it, because they know that's not there yet.
Yeah, no, that, you know, that makes a lot of sense. And you can clearly see their ambition is a little bit higher than what came out. And I don't mean that to insult it, but clearly, you know, they wanted stronger sensors. They tried their
right.
best to get as good battery life as they could.
Yep.
But Yeah, I totally agree. You can see that they're setting their sights a little bit higher.
Now, the question mark that I still have as to whether or not, you know, first gen people are going to be suckers or not is that, number one, I think I saw a report that said the battery is replaceable. They expect it
Yeah.
to last about 3 years.
I
But
saw that.
nobody's yet commented on the hardware inside,
Yeah, this
right?
is so this
So
is
they've
where
made a big point about how saying that the
it's all
system
on
on a
one chip.
chip
Yep.
is, yeah, it's all on one chip and it's all encased in this, you know, I forget what they call it, but basically it's encased in metal, kind of like some of the hard drives that you've seen. So it's just all encased and sealed up, and that part is waterproof. So in theory, they should be able to just take the brains out, plop it into a new watch, and you only pay for the new body. With that said, based on the pricing, just to move the conversation forward a little bit, based
Yeah.
on the pricing, the body of the watch is going to cost a lot, you know?
So
So
yeah, let's so this whole upgradability issue is huge simply because of the pricing. If this thing was, you know, 100 or 200 bucks, you know, you wouldn't think about this that much, but they came out with the pricing and they were either as exactly as people expected or completely the opposite, that they thought Apple would never go this far. John Gruber, a noted, you know, Apple I don't know, Observer got a lot of these spot on. So basically, the
yeah.
Sport, which is aluminum, and it's a bit cheaper materials in relative terms. It's made out of, it doesn't use a sapphire. It uses that Ion X or something like that. It has a
Right.
plastic back, and it's aluminum. That one is, and it has a rubber strap, and only rubber straps. That one is 350 for the smaller one, 400 for the bigger one. Then
Right.
stainless steel, that one has a pretty big range. It basically goes from $550 to $1,100. And
Yeah.
one big caveat to this that I read on somewhere else that, you know, the $550 is for the stainless steel with the rubber strap. And let's be honest, if you're getting a stainless steel one, you're probably not going to want the rubber strap for it. Or maybe you'll have one, but you're probably also going to buy another strap. So having that strap is more to put that starting from number a lot lower. And I think
Right.
that actually worked really well because a lot of people all of a sudden, it's funny how pricing, I don't know, I almost feel like people don't think about pricing, but I guess we'll see when it comes actually buying it. But people were like, oh, you know, I thought this was going to be $1,000. It's only 500 something. That's not bad. But if you want a leather strap or a metal strap, it's going to cost you about 800 bucks. And if you want the metal link strap, that's the one that's 1100.
Yeah, that's insane, right? So the link strap is, I think it's
Yeah.
$450, just
Yeah.
the strap alone,
That's the
right?
strap.
Which, I mean, you can buy two Moto E's, you know,
I mean,
for
the
three of
Pebbles.
them almost for that price. It's insane.
I'm sure it's much better quality, but the Pebble, the steel strap, which is kind of links, is $20.
Yeah.
Now, obviously the quality is going to be different, but $400 is quite, you know, that's
Yeah.
pricey. And so the other thing too is, so a lot of people are saying, well, yeah, this is a lot, but it's like, you know, you're buying two iPhones instead of one. But I think one thing that people don't really realize is that most people, at least in America and many other countries actually, they don't pay $800 for their phone. They pay $200. So when
Right.
you're paying this out of pocket, you're thinking, I might buy a MacBook and this and an iPhone.
Right.
And this whole thing is where the upgradability becomes a big issue because, you know, if you buy an $1,100 Apple Watch that's not nearly as good as the one that comes out next year, I mean, that's a lot of money to burn for such a short period of time. So
Right. So let's start to wrap this up. Since you bring up upgrades for an Apple Watch, what would you like to see as an upgrade for an Apple Watch?
You know, this has been a flashpoint for controversy, but I'm kind of down on the looks of the watch.
Yep.
I think the straps are incredible. I think they all look great. But you know, I hate to say this, but there's part of me that feels like if the Apple Watch, if that base piece was made by another company, I don't think it would have been as well received. It's clearly well made.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I'm a little down on that. So I'd love to see something maybe a little thinner, or I don't know. I think something better looking. Then there are just all the obvious other points. You know, a better battery life.
Yeah.
At least day and a half. That way you know it'll last the entire day for
right.
sure.
Right.
And then possibly, I mean, I haven't seen it, of course, but maybe a higher res screen. The higher the res, the nicer it's going to look.
Yeah.
But and then, of course, sensors are I think they kind of they talked about fitness, of course, because it's a part. But I don't think it's they didn't talk as though it was that integral a part, because I don't think they have all the things they all the pieces in place yet. So we'll see how that works out.
Yeah, I mean, as far as the fitness goes, we'll have to see how accurate they are. But they've got everything, pretty much everything that most fitness bands do, minus GPS, right? Like a straight up dedicated fitness band will probably have GPS to map your runs. Mm-hmm. But it does have a heart sensor. They haven't said it recently, but they're not using a custom hearts. I mean, they're not using a off the shelf heart sensor, right? They have a custom made heart sensor in there. And then they have a pedometer, right? And I forget what you call it, but basically an altimeter, right? To measure steps upstairs and stuff like that.
Okay.
So they've got basically everything that the newest line of Fitbit has, except GPS. And for that, they're relying on your phone to sync that up. So for the fitness part, not too worried about it. And I've talked about, you know, before on another show that we did, using my Fitbit to record my sleep. And now I'm kind of off of that idea. I'd rather have something dedicated just for sleep. So like a special sheet, or there's some straps that you can put on the
Which
bed,
makes sense.
That sort of thing. So I don't have to. So I'm not worried about not being able to wear my watch to sleep, because to be frank, even the Fitbit, which was all silicone and relatively lightweight, was uncomfortable to wear to bed, you know? So I don't really care about that.
The battery dying in midway through the you know, sleep. And so you look at all your charts and then you realize you're dead every night.
I keep dying. It's weird. But some of the other upgrades that you mentioned, definitely battery life. I want at least, quote unquote, 2 days, because that means I can go app heavy on one day and still know that I'll be working by the time I get home from work, that sort of thing. So definitely better battery life. I'm okay with the styling. I'm okay with the rectangular watch, because we've kind of talked about this before. Yes, I agree 100%. Round watches look better, but round watches, if it's not just for a dial, round watches are wastes of space. You're either cutting off messages or having dead space when you put on messages, because messages come in rectangular formats, right? So so I'm not too worried about the styling, but I would like to see it thinner, right? So that's obviously going to be some tension, push-pull, make it thinner, longer battery life, more sensors, you know, so it's going to be interesting. But the other thing, I haven't seen it in person, obviously, but from screenshots and stuff like that, I think the resolution of the screen is going to be pretty nice. But there's a pretty large bevel on it.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I think
I'd like to see that shrink.
It definitely is good. It's not a low res screen. I guess it just, you know, the higher you go, the more paper like it looks. Especially
right.
with a device like that, that'll be great.
Yep. So last Apple news that we'll talk about, and then we'll move on to. Well, maybe something that relates to the Apple news. This new MacBook, right? And it's a new MacBook, not a MacBook Air. So I think that was a big surprise. But it is thinner than the MacBook Air. So what are your thoughts? And by the way, Mark Gurman of 9to5 Mac was pretty much dead on with this thing. Everything he said would happen, happened. And I think they had maybe a – I don't know if he mentioned the Force touchpad. But
I think
everything
did he?
Okay. So pretty much everything he said would be there was there. So what do you think about the direction they're going in?
So, I mean, initial looks, a lot of things look amazing. And, Apple has the most amazing way of doing presentations and keynotes to make you really, really want something.
Yeah. So I guess we should start by saying what some of these new things are, right?
Yeah.
So it's actually thinner than the MacBook Air.
It's at 13 millimeters, I believe. And the MacBook Air is, you know, a super thick 17 millimeters.
Yep, it's 2 pounds exactly on the dot. Mm-hmm. It's a 12-inch screen, but it comes in 3 colors, right? So the gold, the space gray, and the silver.
Which it's is got kind this... of a throwback, because I remember MacBooks used to be, you used to get a white and a black, right?
Yeah.
And then they just went straight to that kind of silver metal look, and now you can actually get colors again.
Yep. And back when they were called iBooks, they were all kinds of fruity colors. So they've added the color, not that that's a big thing. The other technical advances or changes, I should say, I don't know if they're advances yet. This, as I mentioned, this Force touchpad. So it's unclear to me. I don't think it's going to click anymore.
I don't think so either. I'm pretty sure
Right. Okay. But they have this taptic engine, the same quote unquote taptic engine that's in the smartwatch, the Apple Watch, that's supposed to kind of give you a little, kind of give you some feedback as you press on it, right?
Yeah.
So there's that that simulated feedback, and then also the longer or harder you press it can be used as a different input, right? So you can do a hard press. They talked about hard pressing on words to automatically look it up in the dictionary, that sort of thing, and hard pressing on certain links or something, or hard pressing on fast forward to, you know, go from 2x to 5x when you're using iMovie or something. Obviously, the apps will have to program that into their interface, but it's an interesting concept. Obviously, so they have a Retina screen on it. That's a big deal because the MacBook Air, which they're still selling, does not have a Retina screen on it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the insides, you can hem and haw about, is it a fast enough chip? Is it enough memory? But it's pretty standard.
Too.
Pretty standard stuff. But the big difference is, at least for me, is the one port. Well, yeah. I guess it's technically two, because they have a 3.5 millimeter headphone jack.
So,
and then no power, no USB, no Thunderbolt. It's just a USB-C, right?
Yep, just one. Now, one good thing about the USB-C is it can do many things. I mean, it can output video. It can do what all the other ports did, but
right.
There is only one port. And I don't know. I think this Spartan selection of ports, I it's one of those things you hesitate, because Apple tends to get these things right. And everybody is quick to say, hey, remember about the optical drives? They got rid of that, and it was awesome. The only worrying thing to me about this is, well, two things. I mean, the reason why this could be an issue is if you're charging at all, you cannot do anything else. You can't do anything else that requires a port. You can't, you know, connect to your camera. You can't connect to your TV or something like that. There's always this question, you know, how often is that going to come into play? And how much are we moving towards wireless versions of this? Like, you know, I use my Chromecast every day. You can use AirPlay mirroring to go on the screen and maybe connecting
right.
to your phone. You know, you can send pictures in the cloud and access it that way. My bigger problem, and maybe this is more their, this is just their thought process, so that's why they had to do it this way. I don't know what would be so detrimental to have two ports. Having a bevy of ports obviously is going to add to the thickness. Well, okay, I shouldn't say obviously, presumably. I'm not an engineer, so I don't know how they built the thing, but there's a good chance that the reason why they wanted to get rid of ports is because it just adds thickness, and it just adds to the junk that they have to put in the computer. But there's just part of me that, considering symmetry, I don't think it would be that difficult to add a second port on the other side.
Yeah.
And I think it would add the functionality significantly. I think people can do without an SD card slot. I think people can even do without three, you know, USB ports. But just having that one is going to be it's a little worrying.
Yeah. So I can say it's not for me. This device is not for me. I'm very impressed with the engineering, the design, the look and feel. I guess I haven't felt it yet, but but it seems pretty impressive. But you know, and I can say that I use my iPad for a lot of stuff, and it just has one port, right? It has the same one port on it.
But one thing though, keep going. I don't want to.
I was just gonna say, and One of the reasons I can get away with that is because I don't expect to use it for certain things, right?
Yeah,
Like
exactly.
the big thing that we do all the time is, this podcast. Can't easily do that pod do a podcast on that device, right? It does have a very impressive battery life, and Apple's usually pretty accurate about reporting true battery life. So they're saying 10 hours on this thing, I think. And so
Yeah.
I'm pretty comfortable that it's very close to 10 hours.
Sure.
So that's a little bit different. So maybe, yeah, you can get through a presentation without having to be plugged in, whereas, the current Windows device that I use, I get a little nervous if I'm not plugged in when I'm doing a presentation. Or I know, because, I for my job, I do 3 or 6 hour workshops, and I'm not going to have my computer plugged in for 6 hours. Sorry, presenting for 6 hours without having it plugged in, and I can barely squeak by with 3 hours. And if I do a 3 hour workshop, I know that I'm going to have to go plug in as right after that. So if I have another meeting, I have to be able to plug in after I've done that workshop, that sort of thing. So I
And it's a
think,
confidence thing too. You know,
yeah.
if you accidentally forget to charge your laptop that night,
Yeah.
you can't, you know, if you bring your charger, you're confident. I mean, yeah, you got to find an outlet, but you know, I'm not going to be boned when I do the presentation. But this is, you know, is
Right.
really putting it out there.
So yeah, I think it can work for some people, but I know it's not for me because, the type of stuff that I do, I need a few more ports for my main device, right? Like if that's my work device, I need at least two more ports. I need a designated power, and probably I can get by with the one USB-C port, but I need at least designated power. So, I'm expecting to see lots of Y-shaped dongles or octodongles or whatever, but basically a lot of dongles that basically let you daisy chain off of them some way,
Yeah.
somehow. So
They already
it
put
just
out that
defeats the
$8 one.
purpose to me. It's a little bizarre.
So here's my big question with this. And you know, one thing after researching it a bit, one thing, you know, I was amazed by this, and then I actually found out, so the thinness, it's incredibly thin. I didn't know this, but Lenovo's Yoga 3 and the Asus, and Asus has been on an advertising
Blitz.
attack because of
Yeah.
this. Yeah. So the Asus, one of the ZenBooks, I think, and the Yoga are both actually thinner than this new MacBook. They're not as light. They're not as light.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the Lenovo Yoga, but it's their X, what is it, the X1 Carbon or something? Is that, maybe I'm getting confused,
Well, I
but
saw the Yoga.
there
I
is
don't know if
something out
X1
there
Carbon
that's lighter than this.
though. Then lighter. Yeah. Well, so I mean, that's not to say that the MacBook is, large, but it kind of reduces from that. And the only reason why I mention that is because, so when they released the MacBook Air and they got rid of the optical port, it was obviously a big controversy, but they were going with it whole hog, and this was the future, and it worked out. One big thing with this is they're still selling the Air, meaning that, in my opinion, they want this to be the future, the one port and things like that, but they're not 100% committed to it yet. And so my
Well,
question, what?
sorry, go ahead, go ahead.
Well, so a couple things to know, I guess, and I don't want to be too harsh on it, but there are some deficiencies in that. Well, you could see it as advantage or disadvantage, but it's using a low voltage Core M processor, which is a closer to a tablet chip, but it's still plenty capable. But the only thing is, the advantage of that is that it gets better battery life, but the battery life is 10 hours, which is great, but it's not necessarily better than their other products. And the other thing is the keyboard, it seems like it has less travel. It's probably something you can get used to, but I don't think it would be considered the best keyboard. So my question to you is, would you rather have this or a Retina MacBook Air that maybe has, the taptic feedback mouse, like they add a couple of those things? And, putting it further, what do you think most people would want? Would they rather have this, or would they rather have a MacBook Air that might still be 17 millimeters thick, but it, has all the ports, in my opinion, probably has a better keyboard, and it was and has slightly better battery life, and it has a better processor. That's my big question.
So I'll answer that in a couple ways. So number one, I was kind of making this point earlier with the with the original iPad and the original iPhone. I think Apple actually does. So we always joke on Google, right? Because Google makes these beta products, right? My argument here is that Apple does the exact same thing. Their first gen products are beta in that they're busted and there are compromises and they're really uncomfortable. But they never feel like beta because they design the hell out of it. They use
Sure.
premium product materials and they market it in a genius way. But this is effectively beta because the first MacBook Air was, in
Yeah.
my mind, a
Yeah.
beta because they were saying, oh, you don't need this, you don't need that. And that all became true 2 years later. But for the first 2 years, that was not a very good laptop. It was overpriced. Now the roles reverse. The MacBook Air, they're keeping it around because it starts at $899, right? That's the
Yeah.
main reason they're keeping it around because they still want a sub $1,000 notebook. This new MacBook is, I think, what, $1,299? You're talking
Yeah, that's
$1,300
correct.
for a compromised MacBook. But they're going to
Yep.
get away with it. This is effectively like, I'll call it an executive laptop, meaning that it's not for heavy duty creative work because of the processor that you said, and because of the lack of ports. So it's not for that super serious creative individual. It's not for people who just want a laptop to send email because it's too expensive.
Sure.
So this is effectively an executive or a lifestyle choice, right? It's like an executive decision because I'm the big boss and I want the fancy thing, or it's a lifestyle choice and I like Mac products and I can afford to spend $200 more than I need to on a fancy laptop, you know? Or in
Yeah,
this
and
case, I'd argue it's even more than $200 of Apple tax. But that's what they get to do when they design the heck out of things and market it in a genius way. They get to release beta products that people pay premium prices for.
You make a really good point, and I guess one difference between Google and Apple is Google will release the beta, but you don't know if you're going to get the final product because 100% of failing. With Apple, they're probably going to put out something that they know they want a next gen two out of. They're not you're not going to see, a MacBook die after this year.
I have
And
no doubt that this is going to be the future of laptops and everybody is going to chase this. And you already made the point that in some ways Apple is actually catching up to other PC vendors, right? So I have no doubt that this is going to be the future and this is going to be the new hotness and it's going to be the old standard in 5 years. But with that said, to answer your original question, no, I don't want this. I really don't want a MacBook Air with Retina screen. What I really want is a MacBook Pro. I don't care if it's thicker than all of those. I don't care that it's heavier. It's got the power that I want. It's got the screen size that I want, and it's got the ports that I want. So I'll probably be buying a MacBook Pro in the summer.
well, so then I guess then the second part of that question is, what do you think people would want? And I personally think, I mean, there's another dimension to this because, like you said, it's the new hotness. So I think a lot of people want this. It's not that I think, I know a lot of people want this. But if you really set it down, I think there are a lot of people who don't need a Pro that would probably be better suited to a MacBook Air with Retina, because that's one big differentiating factor. Once you
Well,
go Retina, you kind of can't go back to
yes,
the same
yep.
screen.
And
So
I think that's the thing, that's the other thing that's really genius on Apple's part
yeah.
is that they effectively turned what used to be, so like I said, year one, the MacBook Air was not a good deal. By year three, it was a pricey deal, but it was a good computer. By year five, it was actually a steal of a computer. By year six, it's starting to look a little old, right? Because everything else has a Retina screen and or a touch screen, right?
Yeah.
So the MacBook Air has now been turned into a loss leader, because it gets people in the stores and they're like, oh yeah, I always aspired to have a MacBook Air, and here's this MacBook that's just a little bit more, but it's got all these other nice things. And so comparatively, they're thinking, oh yeah, this is great. And they're not really thinking about, you know, the average person is not thinking about the sacrifices. So I think there will be a few average people, quote unquote, average people, middle class people, who do choose to buy that MacBook over the MacBook Air. But for the time being, the MacBook Air is the cheapest notebook that they make, and that'll still sell fairly well.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I hope they do eventually kill the Air, just because I think one thing that made Apple so successful was the idea of condensing their product lines and making it easy to understand. And they're diversifying a lot more. I mean, they've had to because they just want to get into new markets. But I just don't like this right now, that there's an easy case for a MacBook Air versus a Pro. There are clearly use cases for wanting a Pro versus wanting an Air.
Yeah.
I don't think if you're a regular consumer, there's an easy distinction, besides, I guess, Retina screen, between the Air and the MacBook. And,
yeah,
and
probably...
you're totally right. They want a sub-$1,000 computer, but I just hate that because, to me, that's, you know, that's the old laptop thinking, you know, what, you know, we want every price point kind of thing. But I don't doubt that they're going to work this out. And you're probably right. I mean, and naming it MacBook is a pretty, in a way, it's significant and it'll make sense. You either get the MacBook or you get the MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll see. But it looks cool. I definitely want to at least try it out. I want to see how the taptic feedback. Oh, and just for the listeners, they are refreshing the Air and the Pro. They're not. I don't think they're doing that much, but or maybe just the Pro. But on the Pro, they're adding. They got more battery life out of it, and they're adding the taptic.
Touchpad. Both of them have new chips inside, the new Broadwell chips, which give them both better battery life. And then, like you said, the taptic force touch is going to be on the MacBook Pro. So, my prediction. Not that I usually try not to make predictions, but I will say I agree with you. They probably will kill the MacBook Air line, and they'll probably do it after back to school, because back to school is big, big season. And
sure.
Tim Cook's claim to fame before he became CEO was he was the master of product lines as far as getting all the getting materials and stuff like that. At really good prices, and making sure that their manufacturing was just humming along and very efficient in the way that they use their materials, etc. And you can see that it's not just a design thing for aesthetic purposes, but they're going to the aluminum unibody and all this stuff because it makes their production line much simpler. So I'm pretty sure they will phase out the MacBook Air, but they're probably waiting to get rid of all their excess stock. Or existing stock, get rid of that with the back-to-school sales. And then probably once they announce or around the time they announce this rumored iPad Pro is when they'll start to phase out the MacBook Air. That's my guess. So we actually are going about the length of a regular show because I guess there was just so much to talk about. So let's start to wrap this up. And so this last topic was the Pixel Chromebook, and very similar to the MacBook, you have to wonder who the heck is this for, right? So let's just have maybe a 2-minute conversation about this. Who do you think the Pixel Chromebook is for? The Pixel 2, I should say.
So it's for people who have too much money. you know, it's actually funny. I read somewhere that there was a leak from a Google developer saying, it was literally made more for development purposes, and there wasn't really a strong reason why they needed to sell it. They just wanted to sell it, and it ends up being a good platform for them to develop Chrome OS on. So, for example, one thing that Chromebooks have done really well is most of their touchpads are pretty solid, which is something that a lot of Windows laptops get knocked for, and apparently the Pixel was the touchstone for creating optimized touchpad drivers. I don't know how far that goes, and in some way it doesn't make sense to me that Windows manufacturers couldn't get that, but apparently it's kind of in that way. And Google knows it's not going to sell a lot, and I don't think it wants to sell a lot, or it's not trying to position it as some huge seller. But it's so funny because it's probably their best designed product. You know, you look at the Nexus devices and they're cool, but
right.
they never, like, I would definitely say that the Pixel is on par with the MacBook lines in terms of how they look and how they're designed. They're similar, but they have this unique style that feels different. It's a boxy look, and it's pretty thin. It's fairly light. Apparently, it's very fast. It gets 14 hours of battery life, which is insane. One other cool thing is it has a lot of ports. It's also using USB-C, and it has USB-C on the left and right side, so you can charge your laptop from either the left side or the right side, which sounds like a little thing, but I would totally love that because there are...
No, I like that a lot, actually.
Yeah, you're sitting on the couch, and it just angled the wrong way.
Yeah.
So it's a very good laptop. It's cheaper than before. The first gen was $1,700. This one is $1,000. It's a very good laptop, but it's, you know, spending a grand on Chrome OS. I mean, I think the thing that makes Chrome OS so good is that they're what netbooks were supposed to be. They're really fast, and they're very capable, and they're only like $300.
Yeah. And they're all thin and light and yeah. have decent battery life.
Exactly. So this is just like the first Pixel. I think it's more affordable. A grand is a little bit better, but you know, when you're at a grand, you might as well get an Air or something. You
exactly.
know, I don't know, some other device. It's,
right.
It's definitely the thing I'll think, hey, maybe I'll buy that once they're on eBay for like half the price just to get one. But, I think Google knows it's not going to sell a lot. I don't think it thinks that this is the next, you know.
No, I think that's fair to say. They probably, they're using it as the gold standard just to kind of raise the bar a little bit. But it's still very bizarre to me because you look at the specs, the internal specs, it's actually very beefy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got
the
some serious,
one, really,
yeah, it's yeah. got a serious chip in there. It's got a lot of RAM. So it's just bizarre to me that, you know, all you're going to do is run stuff in a browser because Chrome OS is very, very close to Chrome browser. And
yeah.
so that to me is very bizarre. And like you said, for $1,000, you go with a MacBook Air, you go with, the Lenovo Yoga, and get some really cool features like touchscreen, the Yoga, capacity to flip it all the way flat. A stylus, that sort of thing. So it's just bizarre to me that, it's so powerful. It's got this beautiful screen and it's just running Chrome. But like you said, it's really a tech spec reference and not really a big seller. So
I wonder if you can install Windows on it. I don't think you can.
I think you can put Linux on there, but I don't
yeah.
know if you can. I know you
can definitely do Linux because I've done that.
Yeah.
Although there are some caveats, I guess, but yeah.
But I mean, I guess the hardware in there, you probably could flash the ROM so even the high end model only has what 64 gigs of
yeah,
hard drive
so that's,
drive
yeah.
space. Yeah.
I guess that's one unfortunate side. It's funny, it has 16 gigs of RAM and 64 gigs of storage. So it's like, you know, the RAM to storage. But I mean, it's funny because you know Google could have put a 256 SSD in it. I mean, prices are a
yeah.
lot cheaper, or at least a 128, but they
yeah.
really want you to stick with the cloud.
Right.
If you could put Windows on it, or I prefer OS 10, but you know, that's a lot more difficult.
Right.
I would more seriously consider it because that would be cool. And maybe with Windows 10 or something like that, not Windows 8.
So I think that's going to wrap it up for us. We actually went the length of a full show, even without Rob, just a lot of Apple nerd stuff.
We know you wanted us that bad. We're actually doing a side podcast, the Josiah and Sean show. Where it's just specific to what we want to talk about.
Yeah, exactly. So not sure of the timing, but we're definitely going to do a podcast about PAX. We might do a bonus one once Rob gets back. We'll talk about our PAX experience and Rob can debrief us about his experience at South By. So thanks a lot for listening. And remember, you can subscribe on iTunes. We're also on Stitcher now. Come to the website and share and comment and submit questions or topics that you'd like us to cover. You can get there by going to theunwind.audio. And also check out our D&D podcast called Roll to Hit. That's also on iTunes, Stitcher, and our website. So we'll be back next week or maybe even before. Thanks.
It was gold and white. The dress was gold and white.
Totally. totally black and blue.